Congressman Mike Quigley joins us again on WGN. Congressman, how are you today?
Good morning. And when they do that, it slows the whole line down at the grocery.
I know. I'm always looking, going, okay, please, could an adult not be on aisle 47? Because everybody's looking at you like, really, John? You've got to have a bottle of wine? Okay. Let's talk a little bit about the debt ceiling, Congressman. How optimistic are you that we aren't going to inflict pain on ourselves here?
You know, I never imagined that we could actually default. But, you know, a wise man said there are things that can never happen until they do. I never thought January 6th could happen, but it did. And I know we have to address this debt ceiling, the debt issues long term, but I do put it in perspective. If we're talking about brinksmanship, Donald Trump said, I can't imagine anybody ever even thinking of using the debt ceiling as a negotiating wedge. And President Reagan said, the full consequences of a default or even the prospect of a default by the U.S. are impossible to predict and awesome to contemplate. So, you know, I'd like to think if Speaker McCarthy put a clean debt ceiling bill on the floor, it would pass. And then let's get back to where President Obama was. In 2012, we had Simpson-Bowles, which was a long-term plan to thoughtfully address this that was big, balanced, bipartisan, and it didn't have a short-term effect.
Sure. But with all due respect, Congressman, it's not 2012. You've got Kevin McCarthy, who's answering to Marjorie Taylor Greene and people like that. Put it this way. The president does need to negotiate this, does he not?
I think you can always negotiate, but you've got to have some parameters here. We're going to raise the debt ceiling, and then you negotiate about a long-term solution, which is exactly what Simpson-Bowles did. You're absolutely right to bring out the fact that Speaker McCarthy has to listen to folks, a small number of folks, who were talking about, they don't even care about if we default. And it's the tip of the dog's tail wagging the body politic. At some point, he's got to put a bill on the floor. I don't think there's anything, whether we negotiate or not, that we could put on the floor that will make them happy. His problem as speaker is it only takes a handful to call for a new speaker vote, and now we're in a bind.
You know, they always mention that as though he couldn't survive a speaker vote. I mean, I wonder really how consequential that thing is. I guess it must be a big deal. It always comes up. But if some of these crazies said, okay, fine, we're going to call for a retention vote on you, if it's so crazy, maybe he would survive a retention vote. I'm giving him the parameters here to have a little courage and do the right thing.
I'd like to think so, but this is a different group of far-right folks than we've ever dealt with before. Yeah. These are folks who are visiting the insurrectionists in jails and talking about how they're mistreated when they almost took over this country. And there's a long list of what they, you know, want to do and don't want to do, including reauthorize intelligence programs that keep our country safe. And there's a long list that concerns me. He's going to have to find some group in the middle, and the final analysis, he's got to be willing to imperil his job for the betterment of the country.
But if, in fact, we default, and then the president or you and I could stand there and say, well, these crazy people did it, they forced us to default, I don't think the president has the moral high ground there. It's on his watch. Ultimately, he has to find a way to keep that from happening, right?
Well, I would say under normal circumstances, but if McCarthy won't put a bill on the floor, and the only ones that they're talking about doing are just so draconian, the president has a responsibility on the other side, too. people have a responsibility to work somewhere in the middle and compromise. If you, again, have a disproportionate influence on a very small number, single digits perhaps, members of Congress to throw the country and the economy into turmoil, that isn't anything that the founding fathers had in mind, and certainly doesn't put President Biden in responsibility ultimately.
Well, if you bump into
I voted for Simpson-Bowles. I'm ready to talk if it's reasonable, long-term, and bipartisan.
I think our listeners will be mad at everybody. I mean, sure, we may to that wing of the Republican Party, but it is the Congress that will have failed. And I know you know that. I'm not mad at you, Mike. I'm just saying that this is too critical for it to go wrong. Talk to me for a minute about Clarence Thomas and now Ginni Thomas. Both of them have been the fortunate recipients of large sums of money. And I'm just wondering what sort of laws are or should be in place to insulate the Supreme Court from this.
Yeah, it's a great question. The Supreme Court justices are supposed to follow an existing law, the Ethics in Government Act of 1978, where they're supposed to complete financial disclosures. But surprised or not, they carved out an exception for, quote, personal hospitality. They are the only one of the levels of federal courts that doesn't self-govern. And we all want an independent judiciary, but this is taking a good joke way too far. So there is legislation out there that would rein this in. I'd like to think it has a chance here because, you know, we saw this week with yet another jury verdict that attacks the public trust on all government institutions. And, you know, our institutions only work when the public trusts them. So, you know, the Supreme Court isn't immune to that, and they need to appreciate they don't live in a vacuum, and they need to adopt a code of ethics and follow it.
Well, tell me about that. You're the founder of the Congressional Transparency Caucus.
Caucus, yes.
So give me a specific plank then. What should we ask Supreme Court justices to do or not do?
Well, I think the first thing they have to do is disclose any sort of incident like this. So then there's a very long list of things that members of the executive branch can and can't do, like accept gifts of certain types.
I would say tell them they can't accept any gifts. If you're on the Supreme Court, you can't have a ham sandwich. We do that to athletes in the NCAA, or we used to for a very long time.
Right.
We're talking about well-paid people who have been generally well-paid before and will be paid really well afterwards. So quit if you don't like the terms of the gig, but you can't take gifts. How about that?
Sure. No, look, you start with transparency, that they have to disclose everything. Then you get down to the restrictions of what they can and can't take. You know, can you take a coffee mug when you're addressing or a book or something?
Yeah.
When you're talking about de minimis, that's one thing. But obviously, this is way out there. This is a loophole that they drove a Mack truck through, and it's not right. And then they have to say to Congress, you're going to pass a law that says, here's what happens when we don't follow the rules, and you can enforce it. Right. These aren't the founding fathers didn't say it's total separation of powers. It's a separation of shared powers. So if there's an impeachment, there's a vote in the House and then it goes to the Senate, just like the president went through. So they have to acknowledge that the real cost of corruption is the loss of public's trust. It makes it very hard to govern. And it makes terrible things far more likely to happen when people lose faith in their government. And then, by the way, if they really want to do something special, why can't we watch the arguments before the Supreme Court?
Yeah.
I mean, what I told one of the justices was, can you imagine the historical value of school children today being able to watch the arguments of, I don't know, Brown versus Board of Education? What in the world are you afraid of? Warts and all, we're on TV, even our committee hearings are on C-SPAN. The audience may be low, but you have a chance to watch. And these decisions are so critical. Supreme Court has decided who won a race for president of the United States.
Can you imagine? So, can you imagine the audience that would have watched the deliberation over Roe v. Wade 50 years ago and last year? I mean, that would have been powerful, important.
And here's where we are with that. Right now, about 200 people can, if they get to D.C., can watch his arguments. That's about how many people fit. Yeah. Right now, people are paying others to stand in line for them. this isn't the right thing. If you want people to trust what you do, let them watch. And when they, a final point, when they argue against me, they said, look, people can edit it. They can make us look bad. It can take, same with us. But more, democracy doesn't always look good. You know, the first time I was told that I was wrong about was by the justice. It was the anniversary of Mr. Smith Goes to Washington. And when that movie came out, the Senate didn't want it released because it thought it made us look too bad. At the exact same time, in Moscow, in Berlin, Mr. Smith Goes to Washington was banned because they thought it made us look too good. Democracy's not perfect, but you need to see it. And that's what we're paying for here, is the understanding that, warts and all, we get to watch this.
Mike Quigley. Okay, Congressman, I'm out of time, so I'm banning you. I'm cutting you off. I have to go.
I'll
Thanks
take
for your
it.
Thoughts today. All right, take care.